south of the border, down Mexico way. That's where I fell in love when the stars above came out to play. And now as I wander.
Hello there, all you expat wannabes. I'm Johnny Mueller, and you're listening to The Expat Files, Living in Latin America, the show that tells you just what it's like to live, work, play, and or retire down here in Latin America. It's a mix of the good, the bad, the ugly, and the great, and it's all right here, so let's get started.
So how about a little marijuana story? People like to hear those kind of stories, right? You know, here in Latin America, marijuana's grown everywhere, and it's so, so cheap. Then again, it's really amazing that it's not really legal yet, except in Uruguay. But I understand there you can't really grow it and smoke it. You got to buy it at a registered dispensary or pharmacy. Though it is true in almost every Latin country, it's been decriminalized. And even if decriminalization hasn't exactly been legislated yet, the cops view it that way. And of course, a lot of countries are coming online right now with legislation to legalize it, but that probably won't happen for some months or years. And Mexico is right on the forefront with that. And man, when it's legal in Mexico, look out. It will be a good thing for the world in the U.S., but it will not be a good thing for expats and gringos living in Mexico, nor will it be good for regular Mexican citizens, because the narcos make lots of money off the marijuana trade. And when it's gone, well, you think those narcos are going to get real jobs? Yeah, right. Instead, they're going to get more violent. In fact, we're seeing the signs of more violence and shakedowns in Mexico right now. Because, you see, legalized marijuana in the States has put a big dent into their business. So now they've moved on to the extortion business in a big way. Extortion in the beer and tequila business. Extortion in the oil and avocado business. That means more and more extortions of gringo tourists too, naturally. And of course, extortion at the small business level, the mom and pop business, as well as some of the really big businesses too. The fact is, anyone who's got legitimate trucks on the road, whether it's water, fuel, even Coke and Pepsi delivery, they're getting extorted every day. In fact, they're used to it. And in fact, practically every medium and large-sized Mexican business that's got trucks or cars on the road has an extortion fund. In other words, when they do their yearly fiscal planning, they plan on a certain amount of extortion money. That would be reason 2,456, 7, and 8 why you don't want to live, work, play, and or have a business in Mexico. Wait a minute. I take that back. Playing is okay as long as you're down for a week or two on one of those Cancun package deals. That's always cool. But to actually do any business or have any assets there? Well, in order to put up with that, I'd say you either have to be a very big risk taker, a gambler, an optimist on steroids, or just plain nuts. But you knew that already, right? Well, some of you certainly don't, because I'm still getting emails from people in Mexico saying, Johnny, how come you're so down on Mexico? Now, let's see. Well, I guess you could say, for one, I don't like hearing random gunshots in my neighborhood, and this in a place where it's almost impossible to get a gun legally. Nor do I like hearing reports every single day of people getting mugged and extorted. Call me a coward, call me chicken shit, guilty as charged. But where were we? Oh yeah, the marijuana story. Well, as mentioned, throughout Latin America, marijuana is not exactly legal, not yet, except in Little Uruguay. In fact, since government got involved a couple of years back and did make it legal, and since governments can't seem to do anything right, people living there tell me, the delivery system is so bogged down and loaded up with red tape and bureaucracy, you're better off just growing a couple of plants in your backyard, even though that's technically illegal. But Uruguay aside, you know, with this COVID off and on lockdown and such, you find here in Latin America, since everyone loves to be outside, you know, Latin society is a much more outdoors type of society simply because of the weather. And because Latino society is a very, very social society, people just love getting together. That means there are still lots of yard and house parties, almost always without masks and social distancing too. So, last Sunday, just a couple of days ago, I got invited to a spontaneous house party. So last Sunday, there I was in the living room, sitting on the couch, talking to an expat gringo friend who's been living in Panama now, I think, 6 years. Now, this guy, like a lot of gringos and expat boomers, enjoys the occasional doobie. And apparently, unbeknownst to me, he had just ordered some marijuana about an hour and a half before I got there. So you might ask, how do you order marijuana? Well, turns out Latinos and gringos and expats have their connections, right? And this guy told me, and it's news to me, there are lots and lots of marijuana delivery services. one-stop shop, door-to-door. And you connect with them through WhatsApp on your smartphone. So I said, explain it to me. And he proceeded to show me a contact on his WhatsApp page, a guy named Junior. And if you're familiar with WhatsApp, you know, everybody posts a picture. Everyone except me, that is. So anyway, with Junior's picture, he's standing with his arm around his wife, and he's got a little kid at his knee, with the telltale sign being the giant spliff in his mouth. So anyway, my gringo buddy, Alan, he'd placed an order for a delivery about an hour and a half before I got to the party. Meanwhile, we're sitting on the couch, and Alan says to me, Johnny, I don't know what happened to Junior. He's supposed to be here. He's late. And that's how I found out about this Junior guy. My gringo buddy Alan was getting slightly agitated. The guy hadn't shown up yet. Alan said it's not like him. He usually arrives within a half an hour. Then again, this is Latin America where mañana time prevails. But Alan said, no, not this guy. When it comes to making a few bucks, he's always on time. He didn't call, so Alan thought his motorcycle broke down. You see, as it turns out, all these little marijuana delivery guys do it by motorcycle. So Alan sent him a few WhatsApp messages, and still, Junior didn't answer. Meanwhile, as the party and the conversation rambled on, we changed topics probably 20 times. Almost every conversation having to do with the rise and fall of the good old U.S. of A. Finally, there's a knock on the door. Alan goes to answer it, lets the short Latino guy in, sporting a motorcycle helmet. The pudgy kid grabbed the chair, opened up his fanny pack, pulls out about 10 little white plastic balls, each one the size of a robin's egg or one of those jumbo jawbreakers. Remember those? And then Alan paid him 15 bucks. Yep, 15 U.S. greenbacks. Because we happen to be in Panama and they use U.S. dollars there. And that includes pocket change, except there are two kinds of pocket change in Panama. U.S. coins, as you might imagine, since that's their currency, and coins that are the same size as U.S. coins, but they're called balboas. That's what the old obsolete paper funny money used to be called, too, balboas. But they don't have dead presidents or former slave owners on them. They've got the Spanish conquistador Balboa, who discovered the Pacific Ocean, if you remember your geography and history. Wait a minute. I take that back. He was worse than a slave owner. He was a slave capturer. Not of African slaves. He'd capture Central American indigenous tribes and enslave them. Oh, and by the way, here's an interesting little note about Balboa, which will certainly ensure that his days will be numbered on the Pan-American coins and currency of any kind. Get this. According to Spanish royal records, he managed to collect a great deal of gold, mostly stolen from native women and from indigenous royalty through violence. In fact, he was always searching for gold and slaves. Now, if that isn't enough for the SJWs of the world to want to remove him from all the history books, wipe his ugly mug off of all the coins, and topple all the statues. Listen to this. According to Catholic archives, a priest named Peter Martyr de Anghera, a religious contemporary of Balboa's, who wrote a chronology of that time, he wrote how Balboa had fed 40 local indigenous homosexual men to his dogs. You could say he was a bit of a homophobe. In fact, here's a telling quote from that chronology. Quote, a brother of a local indigenous king and some other men, obliging men who dressed effeminately in women's clothing, went too far with the unnatural for Balboa's tastes. So he fed 40 of them to the dogs. And if that isn't nasty enough, get this. And this is another quote. Only Spanish nobles and gentlemen practiced that kind of desire. The indigenous people of the New World knew that sodomy gravely offended God, but practiced it anyway. So back then it was okay if you were a nobleman, but if you were a local indigenous Native American, well, you were food for the dogs. So then you might ask, are enraged social justice warrior Latinos pulling down Balboa's statues, and they're everywhere, and melting down all those millions of coins? In a word, no. By the way, he had an untimely death when Francisco Pizarro, you know, another genocidal maniac Spanish conquistador, when he arrived, he had Balboa beheaded for treason on orders from the Queen of Spain. Yeah, you know, in those days, no internet, no TV, no radio, no smartphone. A good beheading always brought out the picnickers. But I digress. Where were we? Oh, yeah. So this weed delivery guy shows up 2.5 hours late. And my gringo friend Alan said, what took you so long? Now, here's the part that could only happen in Latin America. He said there was a big congested roadblock where cops were giving out tickets to people who were not obeying the recent rule to drive on alternate days depending on the last number of your license plate. He said, for once, I couldn't do evasive maneuvers. I got stuck in that line. The cops were walking back and forth, checking numbers on the plates. And his plate number didn't match for that day. So the cop asked him for his driver's license, and he didn't have one. Which, by the way, seems to be the case throughout Latin America, with more than 50% of motorcyclists either not having a license at all or having one that's expired. They can get away with it because they're almost never stopped by the cops. When they see a roadblock, they just keep on going because they know the cops won't chase them. And at other times, they just take a side street when they see cops up ahead. In fact, I've seen them jump curbs and go down the sidewalk in the opposite direction. Only in Latin America. So the cop asked him for his license, and he lied and said he left it at home. He said, normally, without a license, they let you slide or try to extort 10 or 20 bucks out of you. However, this time he figured the cops spotted him out as a moto weed deliverer. Why not? Eventually, these guys get known to the cops and everyone else. I mean, they're on What's Up. Anyway, they instantly shook him down, went into his pockets, and found the weed. And the cops said, you're going to jail or you're paying up. So he gave him 10 bucks. And the cop kept his weed. So then the little delivery guy had to go all the way back home, pick up another load of weed, and make the trip again. Then expat Alan said, you didn't take the same road back, did you? And the guy said, why not? It was no problem. They just waved me right through. Though he did say he hid the bag of weed under his gas tank, just to be safe. But he also said he wasn't worried about the cops anymore. As he said, and I've seen this before myself, once you've paid a bribe to a cop, suddenly he treats you like his best friend. Now, you know, Johnny, I've paid a number of bribes over the years to cops myself. And almost every time when it's over and you part, not only will he most likely shake your hand, he'll give you a man hug, though maybe not so much in the age of COVID. Hey, I've had cops give me their street address and their phone number. I'm talking about cops that shook me down for a bribe. You've heard me say this before, but the farther you're off the gringo tourist trail, the more likely Latinos will want to be friends with you. Even cops who shake you down will want to be friends with you. Though, remember one thing. The farther you are off the gringo tourist trail, the smaller the bribes are. Though, don't expect to get off easy in Mexico. That ain't going to happen. Somehow, there, the cops are completely off the rails. If you offer them 10 or 20 bucks, they'll laugh at you. In Mexico, the cops are very serious about their bribes. Meanwhile, south of the border, you know, as you pass on through Guatemala and part south, 10 or 20 bucks, man, the cops are super happy with that. And so are we, right? I mean, look, just a crappy parking ticket in New York or Chicago or L.A. will cost you 50, even 100 bucks. Wouldn't you just love to be able to give 10 or 20 bucks to a meter maid and say, look, here's a sawbuck for your time. Take the kids to McDonald's. But as you know, that's never going to happen. Oops, sorry, little faux pas there. Someone told me, I think it was my brother, you're not allowed to say meter maid anymore. Well, I guess then Capitol Records is going to have to scratch that song off the Beatles' Sgt. Pepper album. Remember that one? Lovely Rita Meter Maid? According to the lunatic SJW standards of the day, that would be sexist and not allowed. Man, I don't know how you guys and gals can take it. Though I know from your emails to me, lots and lots of you are getting your ducks in order to get the hell out of Dodge. The thing is, you want to get your ass and your assets out of Dodge before Uncle Slam slams the door. And it is happening, you know, little by little. As you'll hear right now, there's a new development to punish black sheep expats who dare to leave. Oops, another faux pas. You gotta be kidding me. Black sheep, that's a microaggression, huh? You know, I don't give a No SJW is going to tell me how to formulate my bad sentences. Enough said about that. Anyway, in regards to putting up barriers on getting your ass and your assets out of Dodge, comes this email from an expat insider seminar alumnus, Dave, who's now living in Guatemala. He says, Johnny, I had originally thought of moving my Social Security direct deposits to a Guatemalan bank, but I thought better of it now. Now I'm hearing that the U.S. Congress is planning to impose a general special tax to anyone who leaves the U.S., specifically taxes on any money that leaves the state's banks and heads for another country. So, by keeping my Social Security in a U.S. bank and maintaining a U.S. address, I think I might be able to avoid those taxes, which appear to be a sure thing after the elections. And Johnny, the original reason for me not moving my Social Security direct deposits to Guatemala was that the Social Security Administration sends anyone with a check going abroad a letter every 6 months, which the recipient needs to respond to on a short-term basis. And if you don't, you get that letter that says they're going to stop your check. So you lose that month's check, and getting that back is a hassle. Anyway, Johnny, if you've got any ideas on how to avoid what's coming next, I'd appreciate it. Well, thanks for that, Dave. And you know what, Dave? The U.S. Congress has been threatening to do that for years now. That is, threatening to put a tax on money going out of the country and landing in foreign accounts. So, Dave, if that discussion has been on the table for all these years, why do you think it hasn't been passed so far? Well, that's because, Dave, 3/4 of the products that used to be made in the United States are made now in Vietnam, China, Indonesia, India, Mexico, South America, etc., etc. And that would mean, Dave, that all these big mega transnational corporations would have to pay taxes when they send money back and forth to their gigantic subsidiaries throughout the world. So naturally, when certain congressmen try to push a bill like that, there's massive lobbying against it, because all the big transnationals would have to pay those taxes, and we're talking about hundreds of billions of dollars outflowing to foreign corporations and banks and other entities. Now, Dave, that's not to say right after the elections, they won't push a lot of crazy, debilitating taxes through. They'll certainly have to do something because the economy is destroyed. The U.S. is entirely broke, and in such debt, Congress is going to be looking to tax the shit out of everyone and everything, including, if they can, your doghouse and the cockroaches living under your sink. But here's the thing, Dave. Social Security and disability payments have always been somewhat untouchable. Politicians know if they mess with Social Security, they don't get reelected. Not to mention you've got AARP. If you're a retired old fart, you know who those guys are. They've got massive lobbying power in Congress. They've got the force of millions of retired baby boomers behind them. And they claim, if you read their literature, they will lobby that bill to death. However, if it does get passed, and anything's possible, they just might do what lots of countries, including some Latin American countries like the Dominican Republic, have done. Those sneaky bastards. They put a 0.15% tax on all the transfers that come into banks in their country. So then how will that affect Social Security and disability recipients that are getting direct deposits in foreign countries? Well, the number that's being tossed around in Congress is a 0.1 to 0.15% tax. So suppose, to make the numbers easy, you get $1,000 a month deposited from Social Security to your bank in Costa Rica. Well, 0.15% of $1,000 is $1.50. You got it? $1.50 tax on a grand. That means if you're getting double that, $2,000 a month, it's $3 a month you'll be taxed. So bottom line, is it really worth it to open up a bank account in the United States to receive your Social Security direct deposit or your disability check, whatever, just to avoid a tax of $1.50 to $3 every month? I don't think so. Because those are the numbers they're talking about. Now, for example, if they were talking about 3 to 5% tax, that would be a $30 to $50 tax for every $1,000 wired out of the country. Now, that would hurt. But for now, for what I can see, if those lying, maggotist, pustulant thieves in Congress ever get around to passing that tax, it's going to be fought tooth and nail by AARP and other retirement groups. And even if it does pass with the numbers they're talking about, it will be less than the fee that's charged when you pull $1,000 out of an ATM machine. So as bad as it sounds, then I hate taxes more than anyone. Or I should say, I don't hate the taxes themselves. It's just that the taxes are basically thievery. It's the government continuously picking your pocket, taking your money, lowering your standard of living so they could fight unjust wars, bail out their cronies and buddies and banks and industry, and support a totally lard-ass, inefficient bureaucracy. So personally, I'm not against taxes, I'm just against legalized theft. Oh, and there's another really good reason why if you get Social Security or disability, you should have it direct deposited to a foreign bank. That's, of course, provided you've already gotten out of Dodge and have got that plan B well underway. The reason is, if you have your money in a U.S. bank or deposited into a U.S. bank, your federal, state, local government, the IRS, or practically any court or U.S. lawyer can lock up your bank account in some cases with just a phone call. Whereas once your money lands in a foreign bank, as long as that bank doesn't have a branch in the U.S., they can't touch it for love or money. But you knew that already, right? Oh, and by the way, as far as being able to live a nice first world style life on just a Social Security or disability check, let's say $1,500 a month, well, as long as you don't have a house or a car payment, you can absolutely live a first world lifestyle here in Latin America as long as you're not on the gringo tourist trail. And if you are on the tourist trail, food and lots of other things are very cheap, but rent will kill you. For example, when you're off the gringo tourist trail, you can get a really nice apartment for around $500 a month. But when you're on the tourist trail, that might cost you $1,500. And there goes that Social Security check, right? Take me, for example. I'm a single guy, and I can easily live on $1,500 bucks a month. But then again, I'm not a booze drinker. And, of course, I'm not counting all the trips I take. But if I was living in one particular place all the time, I don't think I could spend more than $1,500 bucks a month. Though, again, if I had a car or a house payment or both, then $1,500 wouldn't cut it. But just rent and expenses, man, if you're off the Gringo Tourist Trail, $1,500 will do you fine. And if you're a couple, I'd say on $2,000 or $2,500 a month, that'll work fine too. Meaning, you'll never have to load the pantry up with mac and cheese, hamburger helper, or Google 101 ways to prepare cat food. Though I do know some gringos and expats who have a thing for mac and cheese and hamburger helper. Just don't invite me for dinner, okay? So anyway, bottom line, Dave, as far as taxing outgoing Social Security and disability payments to a foreign bank, I'm 100% sure after the elections, we're going to see drastic measures, drastic taxes, an extreme real estate bust, with deflation at first and then inflation like we've never seen before, with permanent business closures and job destruction beyond what anyone can imagine. That's why you've got to think about getting that Plan B going to get out of Dodge. And the best way to get a massive head start, come on down to my January 2021 Expat Insider Seminar. Now, instead of going over the benefits of the seminar one more time, just go to expatplanb.com and click on the seminar link. It's all there for you to review. Sign up while you can. Get in on the early bird discounts because I'm limiting it to 25 people. All right, now we have an email from another Expat Insider Seminar attendee, Juan Dollar. Not his real name, of course. It's a good one, though. I've read emails from him before. They're always interesting. Anyway, he attached an article to his email and says this. Johnny, here's an article for you talking about Guatemalans leaving for the U.S. because of drought and climate change. Can't grow stuff here, they say. Is there any validity to this article? Signed, Juan Dollar. You know, Juan, ever since I came to Latin America 30 years ago, even back then, the local media, TV, radio, of which I was part of, the Latin American radio scene, since about 1998. Way back then, they were talking about climate change, droughts, floods, etc., etc. With the news always focusing on a sad-looking farmer and his family in a burnt-out or flooded field. Most often, it was a field of burnt-out corn, the staple down here for tortillas and such. The fact is, Juan, it's the small mom-and-pop farmers that are always highlighted, not these gigantic farm industry players who know exactly what they're doing. Yep, it's a small guy that rolls the dice every year, and a lot of times he loses. The question is, how come you never hear about the big sugar producers, the big pineapple, avocado, and banana guys? They're not in the news complaining, yet they continue to export to the entire world. And in some countries, the number one export, tropical flowers and roses. You never hear in the news about climate change affecting them. So then why do the big guys continue to thrive and survive? It's because they're not throwing the dice. They grow their crops scientifically, and they're heavily mechanized. And some heavy into chemicals, too. Though not all of them. Many organic farmers here, too. But recognize this. If you take a car and drive through Honduras, Guatemala, Mexico, any Latin country, you'll see gigantic farms with huge amounts of produce. And then you'll see little truck farmers, little patches of farmland on hillsides and slopes that don't look like they're able to support much, that they can be farmed. But they are. And all the good land, the big boy transnationals have it. The flat land, the easily cultivated land. And the little guys have always been eking out a living, throwing the dice every year, farming on the marginal stuff. But here's the thing. When you look at those gigantic industrial farms, they're heavily mechanized. Meanwhile, the little guy with just a couple acres, most of them still do everything by hand. They don't even have a tractor. It's all manual labor, the way they've been doing it for hundreds of years. And when they get a bad year or two, man, they suffer. So what do they do, or mostly what do their kids do? They head for the big city or throw the dice in another way and sneak into the U.S. And it's not always because things are tough on the farm. It's that they want to be where the action is, in the big cities. Or head north. The land of milk and honey, el sueño americano, the un-American dream. So let me just repeat once again. The big farmers, the ones that are shipping to the States, like Chile. One of their top exports is wine. I'm sure you've had it. Same with Argentina, along with beef and soybeans. They're massive, highly mechanized businesses. Speaking of grapes for wine, they're very fragile. So you should have heard of in the news about vineyards being destroyed by climate change, right? How about almost never? and bananas, pineapples, coffee.
Sure,
occasionally you'll hear about a new pest or a fungus, but you don't hear about climate change wiping those fields out. So I've got a question for you. How come you see the little mom-and-pop guy anguishing over his crop, and the big guys never do? Because the little guys don't have good land. They don't have science or mechanization. That means they're virtually 100% at the mercy of the elements. So if it's really true that Guatemalans and other Latin Americans are leaving in great numbers because of climate change, I say come on down, get in a car, and take a ride out in the boonies. You'll see pineapple, cocoa, sugar, coffee, bananas, coconut, and avocado plantations, etc., as far as the eye can see. All, of course, on nice, fertile, level land. So then what about all the hills, valleys, and mountains in Latin America? Well, those are farmed, too. They're subdivided and subdivided and further subdivided into postage stamp-sized lots. And you know what? I swear every gringo I've been out in the boonies with has said to me at one time or another, how in the hell do they farm that stuff? That's land for goats, not crops. But still, mom-and-pop farmers are slugging away at it, same way they've been doing for hundreds of years. All horse and manpower. So why don't you do it? Come on down and rent a car. You'll see exactly what I mean. Then we'll sit down and have a discussion about climate change. Now, I'm not saying climate change isn't happening. What I'm saying is 80 to 90% of small farmers are on marginal land, always been on marginal land. They're very poor and barely squeak by, rolling the dice against nature every year. But they do have an escape valve. At least the adolescents and young adults do. That is, head north on that big trek to meet up with Uncle Tulio. He must be doing all right. For the past couple of years, he's been sending back $100 a month religiously. You get the picture? Now, I'm no fan at all of industrial farming, but they've got plenty of industrial-sized organic farms here, too. In fact, there's a couple of nice big organic farms right outside Antigua, Guatemala. We always visit a couple of them at the Expat Insider Seminar. They've got on-site organic restaurants, too, with everything the restaurants serve grown right there. Yet, you never hear those organic farm owners complaining about climate change. Why? Because they're up on the latest science on how to grow things. If you come to the seminar, you'll see all that with your own eyes. Oh, and one of those organic farms has an excellent deal going. You donate 4 hours, that is, work on that farm for 4 hours. And at the end of the day, you can take home as much organic produce as you can carry. So bring along a couple of jumbo shopping bags. What a deal, huh? South of the border. You've been listening to The Expat Files, Living in Latin America. If you need some help with your own Plan B, we can schedule a one-on-one phone or Skype consult. Just send me an email, theexpatfiles@gmail.com. And if you want to get on the waiting list for my next week-long Expat Insider Seminar in Central America, where you're guaranteed to get a 2 to 5 year head start on your Plan B, send me an email, theexpatfiles@gmail.com. Nos vemos.